The following podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young listeners or workplace environments.
So, you know, I told her I was a male prostitute.
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
All right, it's the FatCast. I'm Engineer Al. Coming up, interviews with Stan Helinski, with Torben Sherwood of Valley Games, and with Grant Dalglish from Columbia Games. Let's do it, boys.
So anyway, here we are with Stan Helinski. Brand name dude, known very well for working with his brother, correct?
Yes.
On the Crokinole boards, by which all other Crokinole boards are measured. I think that's pretty much a universal truth.
Yep.
That you are like the Crokinole board guy.
That was the first name I heard when I was looking for.
No, seriously. Anytime anybody talks about it, I mean, who else? Mr. Crokinole? I mean, he's all right. But you guys are bar none like the Crokinole board people that everyone's talking about.
Yep.
You've also developed some games. You did a lot of work on Hearts and Minds
with a
friend of the show, John.
Yeah, I did a lot of work on Hearts and Minds.
You also did what started out as a expansion redesign, something on Cowboy Way of the Gun.
Yes.
And that was basically turned into its own game. You kind of took out all the Way of the Gun stuff and are left with this incredibly awesome game.
I was going to start off with an expansion. That's what the plan was, because I had this idea about doing Indians. I was driving home.
Native Americans, Stan.
Native Americans. I actually missed my exit on the way home. I got so involved thinking about it. So I finally made it. And so 2.5 years later, I'm trying to wrap it up. But at one point, it was going to be an expansion, and then Worthington said, why don't you just make your own game? So the handcuffs were off, and I built a brand new game, somewhere between a lot more complex than Cowboy Way of the Gun, which is more like a party game, and the old Gunslinger, which was an incredibly complex game. So it's somewhere.
Gunslinger, I'm going to say, is borderline unplayable. I mean, it's not that it's unplayable in the sense that it's not designed sensibly.
It's pretty inaccessible.
But it is, like, I look at it. It's like Starfleet Commander or something, you know, or ASL, where I just look at it and I'm like, I'm not doing this. This is too much. I played the game with you the other day.
Yes.
It was fucking fabulous.
Well, thank you.
It was really great. It was one of the most narrative games that I've played in a really long time. It is something we talk about on the Fortress a lot, is the question of theme and narrative, and the fact that, like, flavor text on cards doesn't create narrative. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, this game is so thematic and so narrative because it has all this flavor text on a card. And that's not what is creating a theme and a narrative.
Nope.
A theme and a narrative is what happened in our game, where I can tell you, well, the cowboys, they were the military guys, because they weren't cowboys. They were, you know, the military guys started out in the bottom of this ravine, and they found a dead guy. They had to fight their way out of the ravine. All these natives showed up. There are these sneaky guys that are at the top of the ridge shooting down at them. Then they're trying to figure out which ones are actually guys and which ones are just kind of like not really guys, chasing shadows around. Then there's these other guys that come riding in on horses, and everybody's just kind of trying to fight past them. And the story that happened in our game, you know, like, this guy got taken down. The sneaky guys just shot him up. But they managed to fight their way out to the edge of the ravine.
Well, one guy fought his way out. Well, left the other one.
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
Apache.
So they're fighting, then the other guys are there. The one guy who's the leader, the lieutenant, he manages to sneak around the side and escape off the back of the board, which is the winning condition for the scenario. So the leader of the Union troops. Well, I guess it's not the Union at that point. My history.
Cavalry.
Yeah. Cavalry guys. He manages to make it off the end of the board, leaves all his guys for dead. Half of them are already dead anyway. And wins the scenario for him. And I mean, that's a story. And the story was had not by me reading a card that said, you know, who this guy was, or setting a tone off of, like, reading a thing. It was a story that took place
in the game.
In the game. And it could have gone a completely different way. And every time you play it, it can go a completely different way. And there's
a dozen scenarios.
A ton of scenarios. I mean, it is... I'm very, very impressed with it.
Well, thank you. It's about, you know, it's about the Apache Indians in the late 1800s, middle to late 1800s, and this, you know, and their battles with the with the troopers and those cowboys, and hopefully I prepare to both sides. You know, so
I mean, it seemed good. I saw you guys playing another scenario later, where they were like, you know, rampaging cattle stampedes, running around the board, messing everybody up. There's guys jumping off of buildings. I mean, I like it because it has a good level of complexity where you can do all this weird, chromey kind of stuff, like light a building on fire, and you know, you can try to do that, or you can. But it's not. It's very intuitive. You taught it to us in what, I don't know, 20 minutes?
Or yeah.
The horses are a little complicated. But you taught it to us in like, you know, 20 minutes, and we were up and playing, and it was great. You said you were finishing up, or
yes,
where is it in the process?
Yeah, I'm about ready in the next month or two to turn over all the components and the work, the rules over to Worthington, and hopefully it's getting ready for publication. So they agreed to do it.
Are they going into a numbered system? You know, I don't remember if Worthington does like a P500
system. No, they just publish games. So, you know, they're enthusiastic about it. I'm happy to know that you see that a lot of people enjoy it. So when you do a thing like this, you're afraid that you just spent 2.5 years on something and they're going to say, what a pile of steaming crap. So it's not that. So I'm really pleased and happy, but it's still scary. And probably I'd like to see if maybe like early next year, spring of next year or early months, we get published and it'll be out.
Awesome. So, it's a great game.
I don't know what they're going to call it. I call it Apache with an exclamation point, like somebody's screaming their lungs out.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's the plan.
That's awesome. So you're still making Crokinole boards? Somebody told me that you might be retiring from
I've been so busy with this project that I haven't made anything since last September, but I've left it all to him. He's out of work, so he's like taking up doing it all, and I just don't have the time right now. I may pick up some around Christmas time and help them out. But
you guys are backlogged ridiculously. I mean, years
we were,
ago.
Yeah, we
were.
Yeah, we
were. Right? You're so
usually
popular.
Didn't have many boards. We had to get special requests for people to come in and get some stuff. But right now, we're a little ahead of things, so we've got some stuff out there, I understand. And usually come around Christmas, everything is gone. So.
I played on a couple of your boards before, and it is definitely a far better experience than most and than any other board I've ever played on.
Well, thanks, yeah. But we're just one of many.
They're beautiful too. I mean, that's the thing. They play great, but they're also just. The pieces of real craftsmanship.
My favorites are like the painted ones. We have an artist who she does.
Penny, right? Is that her
Penny,
name?
Penny, yeah, does all
see,
this
I am,
artwork.
I am,
yeah,
I know what's going on.
She does all this artwork, and people ask for, you know, I'm Christmas theme.
Yeah, yeah. See, you've done some really cool ones.
So there's some really neat stuff that, you know. So it's artwork. I always looked at it as art.
Well, it's great. People put them up on the wall, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome. Up.
Yeah.
Awesome. Anything else? I mean, you working on anything else right now? Like down
usually,
further down
the I don't. Line, yeah, or? No, I don't see how people can work on more than one thing at once. I've got a couple ideas, but it just takes up. It just sucks away my life, and so it just keeps me so busy that I just don't have really any time.
That's
doing
awesome.
A lot of other things, but you never know. That I got some ideas. I'm just scared of what they're gonna. You know, it'll just take over my life. And I'm gonna so.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Everybody, make sure you check it out from Worthington Games. It may or may not be called Apache when it comes out, but definitely if you follow the show, we'll keep talking about it. We'll definitely know when it's out and let you guys know. It is incredibly awesome. If you're looking for a Crokinole board, you know where to go. Thank you, Stan, for stopping by. We really appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
So we are here, WBC 2012. This is getting into the late night. Some of our favorite people. We got Torben Sherwood from Valley Games. We got,
Emmanuel
I can't see.
Agent.
All right, I was going to fuck that up anyway, so that's great.
There you go.
What is your deal?
Well, my deal is that I just did my
game. Oh, you're that guy. Fucking
that guy. Yeah.
High five, man.
I'm the D-Day guy.
Yeah. All right.
He's the designer of D-Day Dice.
The D-Day Dice dude.
All right. And then we got Brooklyn J.
What's happening?
Owner of Second Chance Saloon. The finest drinking hole in all of New York City.
Well, we can't wait to come. That's for sure.
Drinking hole? What? No, it's drinking spot or watering hole?
It's a drink.
Get close here. Get close.
We're not going to lie about it. Yeah.
You got to get a sit in. Scoot your chair up. I'm not going to bite. Yeah.
Hard.
Yeah. So anyway, D-Day Dice.
Okay, so we brought you a gift. I talked
a bunch of shit.
A little smack about Kickstarter. Not about you personally, just about Kickstarter.
No, no.
You did kick. You called us a respectable company, which I did appreciate.
Okay, you sons of bitches, you called us respectable.
Yeah. First of all, but you questioned the value of the Kickstarter, and so for that, we wanted to thank you. So Emmanuel and I both signed this copy of D-Day Dice for you. Thanks for supporting our Kickstarter campaign. Hugs and kisses, Emmanuel and Torben. The reason why is that, I mean, we were pretty successful, and it was one of the most successful.
I mean, you guys are one of the poster children for how fucking insanely off the charts Kickstarter can get when that ball gets rolling.
And seriously, I mean, it was a huge surprise to us, but at the end of the day, we reacted. We were reacting the whole time.
Oh, we weren't planning that.
We were completely reacting.
You guys also...
Can I ask a weird question? Based on the success that you had with Kickstarter, like, do you think if you could do it over again, would you do it differently and not do Kickstarter and just straight publish it?
No. Currently on Kickstarter, Airborne In Your Pocket by Emmanuel Akin is now listed. Please go in and support.
Well, I'll get to this later. Jay, jumping ahead. I got a pacing here. I got a technique. You're the color man.
I'm the hype man. I'm the flair.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You're gonna give us some stats.
Jay is wearing an enormous clock around his neck. Those of you that you can't follow. I mean, you can't hear it on the radio that his clock. It's ticking pretty loudly. So maybe you can.
The shit tick when it talk.
What made you guys go Kickstarter? I mean, you guys, like I said, you know, I question publishers. You know, I understand when it's like your first game, your second game. You know, you're starting out. You don't have the capital to get it going. You want to see, hey, is this something that's, am I going to blow my entire 401k on a game that's going to fill up my garage for the next 20 years and then my wife's going to kill me?
But it was my first game, though.
It was your first game as a designer, but as a publisher, you know, you guys maybe, you know, are a little more comfortable with the process. You know, it's obviously, you know, you put out games without Kickstarter. Before, what is it that made you guys want to jump into the Kickstarter? I mean, what
we started out with pre-orders before, and the problem with the pre-order programs that we did before, we had some issues, things like delays in production. We never had experience printing before when we first did this, right? And it bit us in the ass, right? To be honest, we just didn't have the skills at that time, in the early part of our lifespan.
Those generals were a perpetual source of
and other things from Titan. We had the Titan miniatures.
Not for nothing, though. Generals and Titans aside, the product itself was
understandably,
phenomenal.
But that was
phenomenal.
Not, and public's perception was that those free bonus items, even though there was a 40% discount on the product they bought in a pre-order bonus, that wasn't enough. And we discussed this last time, but we weren't proud of that stuff.
Customers are dicks.
Well,
for sure.
Customers can be opinionated, and some are.
Hey, listen.
What it is they get.
We've said it before, right? You guys fucked up.
Yeah.
It wasn't your fault.
No.
You had the best intentions.
Right.
After getting to know you, support you 100%. Everybody fucks up. Everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah.
And you live and you learn, and you tried to make everything right, and you move forward. You still put out amazing games that were really well done, done with passion and consideration, and showed that you really cared about doing those properties because you actually liked it. You want to be it in the long haul. And if you're going to talk shit about, you know, first time dude making some mistakes with production, it's complicated, whatever, fuck off. Like, I mean, really, like, you're whining.
Putting out a game that people have been fucking putting on eBay for,
It's cool to be like, hey, you know, what's up? That kind of sucks.
Yeah.
And obviously you try to make it right and you try to fix it, but at the end of the day, I mean, you meet in the middle somewhere, and it's not a fuck you. It's a bummer. Right. It didn't work out for any of us.
Right.
You know,
exactly.
I mean, it's you continued pushing through it, and your stuff's getting better and better, higher quality as you learn more and more. You know, get more and more comfortable or whatever. And it's awesome to see that you're persevering too in that. You know, that it's not like a, you know, you didn't flip out and say, well, fuck you all. You know, I mean, like.
I think a good point to make, though, is that it's not that the game didn't work out. It's this one aspect of the game. The game itself worked out, you know.
In every case, there was nothing to do with the game that caused the problem.
But absolutely.
That's neither here nor there, and we're going to throw that under the bridge now. And we're not
absolutely.
Yeah,
I don't even want to talk. Yeah,
no.
That's all shit.
I mean, our whole incentive for the Kickstarter was, look, this is a fresh chance for us to give some exposure to not only a new design, but something that we think has kudos to reach a lot more people than our standard audience, right? And there's been some success previously with other guys doing Kickstarter campaigns.
Yeah, Alien Frontiers. I mean, that's sure. Everybody's chasing Alien Frontiers, I think.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, that's what we chasing.
And from that point, we decided, let's give it a go. Let's give it a try. And we then focused on rewards and bonus items and things like that were game related. That
was our huge thing. You guys went fucking nuts with it.
Well, we went in an
impressive, in an impressive way. I mean, you did a really good job of, like,
we were improvising.
Here's a bunch of shit. Here's some other shit. Oh, here's more shit.
Not gonna lie, we improvised. We were reacting. We were standing there going, okay, now we're at 80. Now what do we do?
You mean those bags weren't in the pipeline to begin with?
You want to know the story about the bags?
Yeah.
I'm sitting there in my office and at my home office, you know, where I live with my kids running around, and I have a messenger bag sitting on my desk that I bought 20 years ago. And I said to the guys, wouldn't this be fun if we could produce a messenger bag and give that away for these guys that are supporting us, right? So from that point, it was like, wow, this is great, right? And yeah, the response from that has been, I had a guy come up to me and shake my hand today and say, I'm really sorry. Why? I only donated $50 for the thing, and you gave me like $110 worth of stuff. I'm so sorry you lost money on me. And I said, no, thanks for supporting. I thought that was awesome, right?
So I love it. You guys, again, I mean,
it was a full-time job.
I feel like I've been kissing a lot of ass this evening. But I've been fortunate enough. I've been fortunate enough to be interviewing a lot of people that I really respect and like. And you know, I mean, we've said it before. You know, you guys were, you know, originally when you guys were kind of like starting out, I mean, not that I wasn't publicly like being all like fuck Valley Games, but I was just kind of like, these guys, like, what the fuck? Yeah, get it together, fellas.
We were flailing.
But, I mean, you guys are just, you're turning into like one of the people that you are like, fucking A, whatever they're doing, even if it's a game I hate and don't like, Stronghold. But it's still a nice production. You guys just, you know what I mean?
Thanks,
like, I'm not going to like everything that everyone puts out. I mean,
no, of course,
believe me, I love Zev to death. I work for Zev, and he puts out some fucking terrible games. You know, so
understood.
But they're still well done. They're crafted with care. You know what I mean? That's what you want to see.
Yeah.
And you guys are like newcomers that are really doing everything right.
Yeah,
like
thanks, dude.
I'm getting really
totally
drunk. I'm totally like, this is a terrible interview. It's just me like blowing you guys for 20 minutes. Like,
it's not actually happening just for you out there.
So you notice you only brought D-Day Dice.
We only brought D-Day Dice.
What else you got coming out? I mean, like, what else is in the mix?
Airborne in my pocket. We've got
tell me about that. Tell me about that real quick then. Yeah. I mean, that's your game,
it's
right?
The first game I designed actually before D-Day Dice. I had the idea for D-Day Dice while designing the other one. And
I love your accent, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah.
I love how you say D-Day Dice.
Rid of it.
No, it's great. It's awesome. Yeah. Don't change a thing. It's beautiful.
Okay, well, thank you. But
just the way you are.
Airborne in my pocket?
Yeah.
I've got that.
Well, thanks.
The print and play.
That's cool. Well, awesome. Yeah, it was a pretty play, exactly like D-Day.
I like it, man. It's cool.
So,
Josh Link is supposed to go be going to get us tacos, but you guys wanted to go to bed. We were going to go get tacos, but, you know, we want to make sure we get you guys. So,
thank you.
Well, of course, Josh Link hasn't gotten tacos. He's just fucking about over
here. I'm not going without you.
Oh, okay. Well, then sit the fuck down.
I'm sitting down.
Well, scoot in properly. Like, Jay can scoot over.
Someone's over there. I'm going to play Specimen.
All right.
It's very casual. I like it.
Thank you, Jay, for stepping in for a few minutes.
I can sit in a chair like the best.
If you're ever in New York City, check out the Second Chance Saloon.
659 Grand Street.
Nice. 659.
New York.
Yeah.
It's the chicken without the head.
It's a fabulous place. Yeah. Karaoke on Tuesday nights. It's a great time.
Especially if Matt's there. We'll sing all
the... Does Matt sing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We'll break down.
You lay it down. Me and Jay do some duets. It's good. So, Airborne in my pocket.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Well, it started as actually it was a mod that I did for another print and play called Zombie in My Pocket.
Yep. Familiar with
which
that?
Which I liked a lot. And I liked the concept of having a solitaire game.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it's better than masturbating, right?
Well, both are good.
I don't know. Yeah.
Both are good. You just don't do
them at the same
time.
Torben doesn't masturbate. He doesn't know.
I'm married.
Yeah, okay.
Married. Yeah, I don't need to.
Okay. Canadians apparently have wonderful marriages. All right.
That's right. Cool. It's cold outside a lot.
Yeah, it's true.
I gotta tell you.
Gotta heat that igloo you live in, right?
Yes, that's right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
log cabin.
That's right. Log cabin. Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. I shaved my beard just
Yeah. I'm surprised you don't make flannel. I mean, what the hell?
I know. Yeah, I know. It's hot.
You're wearing flannel under that shirt.
Maybe.
So anyway, Airborne in my pocket, Zombie in my pocket expansion kind of thing.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Or variant.
A mod.
Yeah, so I did. Reskinning kind of thing.
Reskinning, yeah, that I did. And I actually liked it. And I've always wanted to do games, so I started doing that. I published it on BGG, and it got good reviews, so I was happy. And then I did DD Dice, and when that got published, Valet, you know, told me that, hey, what about Airborne? And I never thought in a million years that little mod would get published.
How much is different with that? I mean, if you talked, I mean, what is the guy's name?
Jeremiah Lee.
Yeah,
I talked to him. I mean,
is he permission, like, you know,
yeah. First of all,
so he's real stoked about it? Like,
yeah, I was stoked, but I mean, to me, I felt uneasy because it was only a mod of another game.
Yeah,
I had to ask him, you know, I said,
oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I was actually contacted by another publisher, and I asked Jeremiah, you know, how do you feel about that? Because, you know, I would obviously give you part of my royalties because it's your game. And he was very cool, very generous, said, no, go ahead, dude. I'm happy for you.
That's awesome. Yeah, so Jeremiah Lee, fucking A, awesome dude. I don't know him, but...
Yes, he is.
The fat cast approves. Good for him.
And so here I am.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Actually, we're bringing Jeremiah Lee to Valley Games Club.
Oh, okay, so he's going to do something else for you guys.
Yep. Zombie in my pocket.
Oh, okay. Right on. Awesome, awesome.
So we're going to work with him on that project. Emmanuel's got a couple more ideas with D-Day Dice involved.
Expansions and stuff.
Come up
there's not enough shit in that box already, right?
Right. Well, we got some other things that are... We're talking about other
things.
That
bag. Right. Yeah. That's the thing. We got to fill your bag.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So there's some great ideas around that.
So you can really go balls deep into D-Day Dice, huh?
You can just get it. Yes, you could. And chicks dig the long ball, I got to tell you. Okay? They dig the long ball. So yeah, no, from there, D-Day Dice has got a bunch of cool things to go. There's the Airborne in my pocket. There's another Avalon Hill title.
Oh, what's that?
That's
is this a hot scoop?
No.
Am I out of the loop?
You're not going to be out of the loop. I'm not...
No, I mean...
Can I tell you what it is?
Something I didn't hear of, right. And I'm like an idiot.
No. We've got something else that's really hot.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Can you give us an era?
Yay!
Just so we can get everybody guessing about it.
It has Germans in it.
Okay, cool. Right. I probably won't be into it then. I'm not very much of a war game.
And I'm working on a small mini expansion to mix Airborne in my pocket with that game. I'm also working on a small expansion to make Airborne work with DD Dice.
Cool. So you're turning it into like one of Valley Games, like in-house, like Magic
I'm
Man.
I'm the mascot.
Here. Yeah, he's no, actually, no, seriously, that's
he's
awesome.
He's got great ideas, and he's got involved with all of the marketing that we've come up with these things and promoting the expansions and the idea of that for a Kickstarter campaign, we need to give away content, not fluff like t-shirts and lapel pins or whatever else you come up with. But we think the value in all those campaigns is that they're getting actual game content versus stuff, right? That may not be worthwhile, right, for the game.
So I'm a bit of a control freak sometimes. So
get people excited.
Games, let me
reward people for supporting early. It's not.
Yes.
It's not. Well, that's the problem with Kickstarter, right? Is a lot of people are doing Kickstarters, and basically you're going to pay more for a game and get like a t-shirt if they do okay, right?
So you can pay.
Whereas like maybe I'll just wait and get it for way cheaper and see if it's good and if you actually produce the game successfully. And you know, I get it from like an online retailer or something for way cheaper than you're charging me and I won't get the t-shirt, okay?
Right.
You know, whereas you guys I think did it actually a thing where you look at it. I really considered it actually. I don't have money. I don't have money. I also don't really do. I did one Kickstarter. I supported one Kickstarter. It was not a board game.
Okay.
I did. It was actually Zombie Run. It's an iPhone app. It's like a. It tracks. It's a running GPS thing.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like a zombie game that's based on how far you're running.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
Yeah, that was cool. So I backed that. So I'm not opposed to the idea of Kickstarter.
Right.
I have issues with the overall
quality
situation that it's creating in gaming. You know, yeah. I think there's a lot of good that can come from it.
Right.
But I think that it is potentially opening the floodgates to a lot of shit that's just crowding the marketplace.
But it's going to sort itself out.
I agree. I think a lot of somebody, we've all been talking about, we're taking basically taking bets. And when somebody's going to fuck it up really, really bad.
Yeah. The problem
and,
that
and
we
the,
see
you know,
that
the
is
hype is going to die.
The poor kid that's got the idea, puts it out there, and then by the time he gets his X amount of dollars looking in his pocket, and he says, now how do I do this?
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
Right? That's the guy. But he's eventually, he's going to feel obligated, and he's going to go find
a publisher
after
that. Well, it's not necessarily somebody's going to fuck someone over purposefully on Kickstarter.
Right.
It's exactly like you say. Somebody's going to do something, and they're going to set a goal at like, oh, $8,000, I'm going to publish, you know, 500 of this card game.
Right.
And then they're going to, oh, we'll put some stretch goals, whatever. And they're going to get $50,000,
right.
And they're going to have all this insane amount of pressure, all these demands, and they're going to freak the fuck out and you know, vaporware.
But if you look closely at the campaigns, most of the ones that succeed are the ones that are well-organized.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the public kind of has a feeling that, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Because I thought I'd see more shitty campaigns succeed. But the games that do reach our goal usually are games that look decent.
Yeah.
What I mean, it's a democratization of the marketplace, which
yes,
is something
absolutely.
I am in favor of to a degree.
Right.
To a degree. We don't need. You guys want to spend the whole fucking time talking about Kickstarter?
Yeah.
So.
Really?
No, but it's one of those things that I think other people are interested to understand that. You know, there is a process, and if you do it properly, it can be successful. And I'm not here to brag to say we made it successful. It was a lucky shot. Okay?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we literally lobbed it over the hedge, and it hit the target, right? And so from that case, I mean, great. That's awesome. But when a guy like Steve Jackson says in his campaign, we followed the D-Day Dice campaign of Valley Games, and that we're really proud of that, and we're going to send them some games. We thought, wow, that makes my head feel a little bigger, but it feels like we did the right thing, and we're in the right direction, moving in the right direction.
No, yeah. See, I mean, I was really, really on the fence about it, and I was like, I can't do this for a lower level. That was the thing, too, because I was like, well, if I do it, I'm going balls deep. Like, I'm going all the way. And I was like, I couldn't do it. Couldn't pull. I have no money. I don't buy games anymore.
Well, yeah, but that's okay, right?
But it was one of the few Kickstarter campaigns that I looked at and looked at and was like, it's fucking cool. Like, this is awesome. Like, this is, you're putting all this cool shit in it. You're giving all these rewards. I mean, it was a really awesome. You know, it was
well organized.
I think it was rewarding people for getting
we
involved.
We appreciate that for sure.
You know what I mean?
It didn't feel well organized. We felt like
I don't know, man. It looked like, pretty legit to me.
I think even more in the organization, it felt like one of those things where you recognize the fact that you were kind of almost asking us a favor. As a consumer, to give you money on this sort of unproven, untested, you know, not untested in the sense that you weren't testing
no, but
it, you know,
yeah, that's, yeah,
nobody,
that's
you know, very few people had played it. It wasn't, you know, wasn't really, like, I didn't know if it was going to be good, you know, so you're kind of asking us a favor to, like, front you this money so that you can, you know, do this thing.
Yeah.
And you, I think, recognize the fact that it was a sort of a two-way street, very much. And
absolutely.
That you really, I felt like...
well, it's an honor
exactly.
Support.
You felt like, just from the start, that you were appreciating the idea that we were going to give you money.
Absolutely.
And I think a lot of other people are not on that tip. And it's really awesome that you guys are that way, because it makes people want to do it.
Well, our validation was, I got to be honest, at this convention with people walking up. I mean, we're talking ladies and guys walking up and saying, fantastic game. It wasn't just the hype that sold the game. It's a good game.
Yep,
and we were actually happy as heck to play it, right? And that kind of stuff made us feel really good. That it bolstered the fact that not only what we did was honorable, but in the end, it was a fantastic game that's been received really well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think this is definitely taking you guys, like, I mean, you're already like a known, you're already known guys. You're doing some big name stuff, but I think this is like a...
to be honest, that's what we did. We blew the load on this. Sorry to arm you with anything.
Really?
But
really?
But at the end of it, we actually did it to give us that respect back, to show everybody that we're in this, to commit ourselves to producing good stuff.
Listen, I mean, you guys are Canadian, so you're like half communist anyway, right? So
I'm from Quebec. So
well, you're even worse. You're even worse.
I'm a redneck.
So you're like, you know, I mean, the thing is that it's like, you guys want to make a salary, you want to make money off what you're doing, but at the end of the day, you want to do awesome shit because you're passionate about gaming. And there are people that you tell are in the industry that are like that, and then there are assholes like Zev who live in fucking giant mansions in drive road buses, yeah, right? Yeah. But really, though, I mean, and it really comes through. So it's excited for you guys that it was so successful.
Well, this is our gift to you, and we're stoked that you're going to have it now.
You got
to
teach me how to play it.
Yeah, you'll figure out how to play it.
Don't worry.
Now you don't have to buy it. You're going to actually own it, and you're going to be
that's good.
Forever in your memory.
I was going to come bother you for one anyway.
Yeah,
so thank you guys so much, man. Seriously, nice meeting you, man.
Yeah, it was nice meeting you.
Okay, so I am here with Grant Dalgleish of Columbia Games.
Hello.
Hi. Tell us about what's going on at, well, never mind that. We just had a wild experience at Taco Bell, and I feel bad about telling this story. You know what I'm going to do? You know, I'm going to Quentin Tarantino it. I'm going to let you know that there was a Taco Bell story, all right, when we were waiting in the drive-thru, and then I'm going to stop there, and then we'll go off in this other tirade, and when Matt comes back, we'll come back to it. We'll move through time. It's amazing. So tell us a little bit about what's going on at Columbia.
Well, right now, we're here at the show.
Yeah? How's the show going for you?
It's a hoot, man. Having a good time.
Having a good time? Awesome. Awesome. Slapshot. Tell us about Slapshot. What is it?
Super popular.
Slapshot is the legendary game of ice hockey lunary. It's all about having a hockey team and trying to make the best of it and beat the pants off of your opponents.
That's awesome.
It's a spoof of hockey. It's not about like shooting and passing and scoring and stuff.
I've always been very tempted by it here. It seems to be like a very well-received event every year.
Yeah, this was the 20th anniversary of the tournament this year, and it seemed like it might have been a record setter with the number of people there.
Awesome.
Huge, just crazy. I mean, there was at least 100 people in the room.
Awesome.
All hooting and hollering. And,
you're wearing a referee shirt. Did we mention that?
That's fun. Yep.
Yeah, the ref shirt, that's a marketing thing, you know, so that people know that I'm the Slapshot guy.
Awesome.
Did we cover this already? Because I just met Grant a few minutes ago.
Yep.
I know Columbia Games, but I don't actually know anyone by name. So are you like the boss man? Are you like a sidekick? Are you just a random guy?
Columbia Games is my dad's creation.
Oh, okay. All right.
Fucking A.
Yeah, it goes way, way back in 72.
Yep.
40 years this year.
Wow.
And the original name was Gamma 2 Games.
Okay.
But it was my dad. And we were in Vancouver, Canada. And in 83, they just renamed the company as Columbia Games.
Right.
And then eventually, like another 10 years later, we moved down to Washington State.
Yeah.
But it's my dad's thing, and now he and I work together every day.
Yeah.
And you know, we're still a small family outfit, but we work with people kind of all over the world, collaborating on projects and designs and stuff.
Yeah. Well, in the block game field.
Well, you guys are the guys for block game.
Exactly.
We're the guys. I mean, my dad created the whole thing.
Yeah, right. That's awesome.
Yeah, back in 72, the story goes that he was playing an Avalon Hill game, Waterloo, I think it was. And,
yep.
And he was fighting his way up a hill against the French. And the combat results table in the game said that he had a certain amount of, I think a 3-1 advantage over the defender, but there was an outside chance that he could have a bad roll on the combat results table, and he rolled it. He rolled attacker eliminated. And he kind of threw up his hands in disgust and said, "What? How can that be? I mean, how can I lose 21 troops
in one roll,
and you didn't lose any of your 7?
Right.
And he said, there has to be a better way.
Yeah.
And so that's where it was born, the principle of the step reduction that we put in the blocks and the sort of interactivity of the battles.
Yeah.
It's not just one roll. It's all controlled by a lot of dice.
Right.
And over time, dice average out.
Yep.
But there is an opportunity for streaks and luck and stuff.
You guys do Wizard Kings, right?
That's another one of ours.
Yeah. I've always been terrified of it.
It's a heavy, heavy commitment. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. I love all the, like, when people talk about it, I'm like, that sounds so awesome. And then I look at, like, how do I actually play? And I'm like, that is terrifying. As you can imagine, maybe. I'm not not much of a war gamer myself. I mean, I play you know, children's war games, I guess, by real war gamer standards. You know what I mean? Like I enjoy, you know, like Twilight Struggle. I enjoy, you know, like some of the like kids games that GMT puts out. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
You know, like Command and Color stuff. You know, like I am still terrified of stepping into the deep end of the pool. You know what I mean? But from what I understand, you know, I hear a Hammer of the Scots.
Yeah, kind
of, that's what
I was
saying.
First
way to go.
I like to wade in the war game pool. You
know, yeah, baby steps.
Baby steps. I like I like stuff like Conflict of Heroes, probably like my favorite war game. But block games are really cool. And if you're gonna play a block game, Hammer of the Scots.
I love the fog of war. I mean, I love the way blocks work.
Yep.
I absolutely love it.
Yeah.
Like, do you agree Hammer of the Scots is kind of the way to go if you're looking at block games as like a thing you want to try out?
It's awesome in that sense. I mean, the theme has to appeal to you, you know.
But it
seems like it's almost universal that just about all of us have some Scottish or English in us somewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you have a natural kind of connection to it.
Right. I mean, and even if you're, I don't know, like, who's not going to say Braveheart isn't badass?
That's right.
You know? So, I mean, like,
he's
that
alone
is kind of
well,
like...
Well, I hear Crusader Rex
say,
is
like,
also another popular entry point. Is that you guys... I'm sorry. I'm really...
Yeah, no, that's good.
This is not my world.
That's another one, and then...
You could basically do every block game except Command & Color Engines, right?
Just about. I don't know. There are a bunch of others that are starting to
come
out.
It's really a block game.
It's been kind of interesting.
Well, but I mean, that even has blocks. I mean, obviously I know you're the block guys, but I mean, that's the only other game I can even think of that has blocks.
Well, I could rattle off a list of them, but... recently, they've been kind of adopted by a number of other companies. And, you know, my first reaction to that was, what do I think of that?
Right? Yeah.
And then I thought about it a little more, and I thought that... I think it's probably going to help, legitimize the block concept in people's minds. I have, you know, encountered some resistance from some war gamers in the past who have told me that, you know, they put away their blocks when they were four. And they don't play with blocks anymore.
Oh, they only play with tweezers and chips.
Yeah.
That's so much more. Because that's clearly a far more mature way to play with your, like, toys.
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
It's clearly the adult toy.
Yeah, well, I have a no-tweezer policy in my life. But
we're all goofy, idiot man-children playing games.
We're playing with toys.
Whatever it is, you know, like... You can dress up like ASL all you want as being this, like, important historical simulation, but, like, you're no better than, like, you know, me playing Beat Me. Like,
well, you know, I've been told about simulations or games, really, is they are... They don't prove anything except what they are designed to prove.
Yeah.
It's not real.
Right.
It's a game.
Well, we were talking earlier with Andy Lewis from GMT about, you know, using games as a teaching tool, which I think is legitimate. You know,
absolutely.
So definitely, I mean, I think that's cool. But at the same time, it's still like, you know, we're goofy kids. We're having a good time. We're playing with shit, blowing guys up, like having fun.
Yeah.
And that, at the end of the day, is really, you know, what we're doing. If you really want to learn, read a book. You know, like, if you want to kind of experience something and maybe get some additional perspective on a situation
I
think it's great.
Yeah.
But
I like to say that it kind of teaches you a little bit more about the why of history and the who, what, when, where, why
thing.
Yep. You know, you kind of get a sense of what is the strategic importance of that crossroads or that town or
absolutely.
Something. And when you see it in action... it's a little more real, actually, than just reading a book. So.
No, absolutely. I think it's great, but it still, I think it's that fine line, right? You need
fine
to
line.
Have a good time. You know,
fine
I mean,
line.
It's still,
oh.
You know,
well,
this is a hobby.
My
this
strength is making sure that they're fun.
Awesome.
I insist.
Yeah.
And I got that from my father, who just insisted on that from the get-go. You have to make choices in the design to make sure that you give people... An experience passes as a good historical simulation.
Right.
Things are plausible, but it has to be fun. I mean, we are selling entertainment here.
Yep.
Yeah.
If people don't have fun,
we don't really know anything about entertainment, I'm afraid.
Very boring, guys.
Very dry.
Ha-ha.
Yeah.
When we get back to the story of the Taco Bell,
right?
Well, where do we leave off? We were at Taco Bell.
Let's put that in the middle.
Because that seems to be like the thing, like, oh, and while this was going on, we did this. And okay. Then we'll come back because I want to talk about something else business related after. So we're waiting in line at the Taco Bell for our food. We ordered a new Fat Cast record of 60 tacos.
And two chalupas.
And a Coke.
One drink.
And a caramel apple empanada that we did not receive.
But we got a whole bag of sauce.
There was a massive bag of sauce.
Like the size of a Walmart bag, full of little sauce packs.
Yep.
Enough for the whole convention, practically.
Yeah. So the exciting part of this story is that while we're waiting, after we make the order, waiting in the drive-through line,
Interminably.
On the driver's side comes this this girl who looked like she might have been just like her clothing suggests that she maybe like was at like a legitimate like office business sort of situation that decided it was time to get loose, really loose. And she comes up beside the car and white button-down shirt is wide open.
She got out of the car behind.
She got out of the car behind us.
Yeah. She was not just like a street like person that came out of the car.
Yeah.
So she reaches into the car. Me first. I'm in the back seat. She reaches into the back seat and she hands me this little glowy thing.
Yeah.
That
like a glow stick bracelet.
There you go. A glow stick bracelet. She puts it on my arm and then she wants to give one to the boys in the front seat.
Yep.
And
this picture's being taken.
Matt here just says, "I got to go with this." He jumps out of the car.
Yep.
Hops over the hood.
Yep.
And he says, "I need a picture."
Yeah. Matt lives life with under this mantra. What would Ferris Bueller do?
That's definitely pretty true. Pretty accurate.
Yep. And that's the moment is the live big.
Yeah. That seems like a Ferris Bueller moment. Because he calls for a picture. And she decides that that's all right. There's a little bit of a motion there towards a hug or something. It could be just boring, but no,
Matt just picks her up.
He picks her up like a bride that he's going to carry over the threshold.
Yeah,
we got a real good picture of that.
Yeah,
and so then we're still waiting. I mean, it takes a long time to make 60 tacos.
60 tacos is a lot of tacos.
Yeah, so she goes back to her car, right? And we're waiting.
Photo taken.
We got the photo. We're looking at the photo. We decided that we would text it to each other.
We
would have a copy.
The memories should last a lifetime.
It needed to be immortalized. It was big. So, and for some reason or another, she came back.
It came back with a friend.
I'm confident why she came back.
Right.
Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Comes back on the other side of the car, Matt's side of the car this time. And,
yes.
But, you know.
She quickly figured out this is the end of the car in which I do business.
Yep. So then, her and her friend wanted to get a picture. They both wanted to be in a photograph with me. So They kind of stood next to me, and I was having none of that because I'm a big strong man. I very much wanted to show off my muscles.
Yep.
So I picked both of them up, one
at
on each side.
At the same time,
one on each side. We picked these girls up. I'm holding them, and we took another photo.
Yeah. But on her camera.
On her camera.
So I was thinking, how are we going to get this photo?
So I, of course, had to give her a business card.
He whips out the business card.
Yeah, because I'm a fucking adult. I'm serious fucking business.
Yep.
To give her a business card. And
the business card doesn't say what he does either.
No, it's perfect.
It just says his name, here's my phone number, here's my email address.
Yeah, it could be anything.
It's genius.
Yeah.
It's our role.
Yep.
And a little while later, I get a phone call.
Yep.
She wants to know what I'm up to, how I'm doing. I tried to get her to come back to the beautiful Lancaster Host Resort Hotel.
we mistakenly mentioned that we play games.
She was not too keen
on that. I could have said that it was like I volunteer with a bunch of like retarded man children, and they play with toys. And I could have like tricked her. Maybe she would have come back and been like, "Oh, it's so sweet that you spend time with these."
Might have worked.
Right.
Certainly better angle than, "Oh, I'm working at a game convention." But anyway,
it just came out.
Hey, listen, I'm not one to lie to the people. I tell like it is.
I come as I am.
And which is preferably on the bottom. All right. And I think I told her I was, she asked me, you know, what I did. Joe, she said, what's your business? You gave me a business card. I don't know what your business is.
Yeah.
So, you know, I told her I was a male prostitute.
Oh, we were just busting up laughing.
And what did she say? She said something else. She said, oh, like,
that's,
you know,
cool.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, like, all right.
I said, you know, yeah, I was trying to get some business, but you were more interested in tacos.
Yep.
And she wished me well. So she was very glad to have met all of us.
Yes.
So that was
yeah.
That was the end of that
fun
story.
That was a fun, memorable thing. Yeah.
It's definitely a good time.
WBC 2012.
Yeah.
Taco Bell run with a perk.
Yeah.
What's
right?
up? What's up? I pick up more than tacos.
Yeah. So Alex, okay, back to Colombia.
Why we're here and all
why
that.
Why we're here?
Yeah.
Yep.
So there's here to get drunk. Is there like another purpose to this?
There's a Slap Shop app.
Yeah, that's the
big
news.
How long has that been around?
2 days.
2 days? No way.
I'm going to buy it right now.
Yeah, hold on.
Dude, go down on the phone right now.
On the phone.
On the show.
Buying it.
To the App Store.
It's going
to
happen.
Slapshot, look it up. You'll find it in a heartbeat.
Yep.
If I can find where to buy things on my phone.
Yep.
Hit that App Store button.
App Store. I might meet you. Let's have a race.
Well,
all right.
That'd be fun.
Oh, man, there's Wi-Fi.
Barnard Enterprises.
Yeah, that's my programmer partner.
You're on the top.
Made it happen. Yeah.
Cool.
What are we looking at?
Legendary card. $2.
It's a whole buck 99.
Okay, yeah.
Pretty stiff here. I'm familiar with this artwork. Looks lovely. You have no stars.
No, it's brand
we'll
new. We need some ratings. We need some
right.
Makes sense. The idea is that by watching those games, you can get a sense of the composition of those teams. You mm-hmm. want to, you know, not...
So I have the same team every time. I had that six guys.
Those are yours until you lose them.
I can draft them. Well, the one guy got hurt and replaced. Right?
Exactly. It kind of cycles over time, but you try to improve your team, get the best players you can, the biggest numbers. Those are more likely to score, of course, in the matchups. Uh-huh. But, you know, the AI is doing its own thing, too. It's trading and drafting and trying to get its players up. And when you see an AI game against an AI, you're not involved, but you're watching it so that you can get a sense of what those cards are and maybe make a strategy. If the one of the two teams appears really weak, then you want to go play them. Or, okay. conversely, if one of them's got a lot of good players, then you want to trade with them.
You can force trades.
Forcing a trade. Right. It's like stealing the card. It's awesome.
This red team sucks. I'm about to kick their ass.
Yeah, go for it.
Because I watched them and I saw their low numbers.
That's the strategy.
So I'm going to game player 6. I'm going to... Can I shuffle cards?
You can shuffle them and do that.
Change the order?
Do that, yeah.
Oh, so I shuffle it up.
And then you can arrange them further if you want.
Oh, okay. That's how I change this order here.
Yeah, some people like to just do it random, and that kind of keeps everyone guessing.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have a very strong conception of why I should put anyone where, but...
Well, because each of the matchups is... going to lead to a goal or their goal.
Okay, so drop the puck. Here we go. They scored against me already. I'm not good, apparently. They looked weak. There we go. Oh, he bruised, but I got a goal.
Okay. It's
and
hopeful.
Then I saved against his big guy. Look at me. I won.
Nice. All right.
3-2. Look at that.
So the real point of that is that it registers a win.
I drew Tiny Tim back, but he.
Was it a trade or a...
No, he replaced a bruised guy, apparently.
I see. Yep. Yeah, because you dropped him a while ago, and he went back into the communal draft pool, and eventually they come back out again.
He looked nice.
Yep.
I've seen the art. You know, I've seen the game before. I haven't actually ever played it, but I've seen it.
So, you know, it's based on the card game, Slapshot.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
right.
The
absolutely,
idea.
Absolutely.
And Slapshot,
that's what I'm saying. All the art, it's the same art.
Yep. Yeah, we just implemented all that, but then the phone is... we were able to add a whole lot of nice touches.
Right.
So, actually, my programmer partner came up with a philosophy that I really like, which is not just to bring the game to the phone, you know, like an implementation pure and simple, although that is ultimately what we're doing, but we want to bring the phone to the game.
Right.
We want to add some of the cool stuff that these devices can do.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. So this also works on the iPad and the iPod Touch.
Yep. Okay. I have an iPad, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works. It looks great. If you got one with the new Retina screen,
Retina.
Great.
Yeah. So is this, I know this is brand new, but I mean, is this something that you kind of want to explore?
Absolutely. I'm really pretty sold on this idea.
There's more games out there on iOS that I think are kind of more complicated than Hammer of the Scots.
Oh, I think so.
I mean, like,
I would do a much better job if you guys did even just an introductory, like, if you did Hammer of the Scots and that taught me how to play block games in general as a grown man.
Right, exactly.
Like, I would feel much more comfortable doing that, learning on there.
Well, we're definitely looking at that. I think probably that game is in the contention, and so is Julius Caesar. It's another block game.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that. Yeah.
But in both cases, I have trepidations about whether we can come up with an AI that will
be really
competent.
Well, you could even look at, like, you know, just a straight asynchronous, you know, play with other people kind of thing.
That's probably where we're going to go.
You have a really crappy AI that kind of, you know, lets you learn the game.
Yeah, and that's then, a tutorial AI, potentially.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be great.
Just to kind of march you through it, but...
Well, because it enforces rules is the big thing.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
It will. It's unlike the platforms like Vassal and Cyberboard and stuff, which are game aids, and they're cool.
Because I've straight fucked up some games that I played on the internet.
Yeah, you play them, and, you know, it doesn't stop you from moving your tank out on the water or something.
I'm like, oh, I should totally move this over here, right? And then everyone's like, no, what the fuck is wrong with you? Why would you do that? You just ruined everything.
Right. Yeah.
And then I got to, like, try to return everything back, and it's like, whoops, my bad, sorry, guys.
So to make it prime time, it's got to enforce all the rules and give the whole experience. But I don't know if we can ever really get that to being a passable AI.
Well, this looks awesome. I want to sit in the corner and play it.
It's fun. It's actually quite fun.
Yeah.
So do you guys know about the tournament that happened downstairs tonight?
No, what happened?
Well, I know it's huge.
Yeah,
it's very successful every year.
Yeah. Tonight, the 20th anniversary of the tournament. So the game's actually been around longer than that. It goes back to 1975.
Wow.
But they started playing it here 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And it seems like it's growing every year. There's just a whole herd of people that fill up the entire room.
You
all
like
kinds
shot.
Of hooting and hollering.
Do I like
Slapshot?
Yeah. I like the
original. I mean, fucking what?
It's like six. Actually, you know what? The best one is the German.
And all of them are actually all based out of the original game that my father designed and under license from us, and so. It's just about last year we decided, finally, after a long hiatus, that it was time for us to reproduce it and bring it back.
Okay, right on. Print.
So that was actually last year, almost exactly a year ago, that we got the card game back in print. And it's in a nice new format with high-quality playing cards and stuff. And then this year, we've got this app, and that's pretty exciting.
That's awesome.
So, Grant, you've got the Slapshot app.
You guys
it's brand new.
Thanks a lot.
Everyone should take a look at it.
We'd sure like it if you download it.
Matt and I are going to be playing around with it. So, looks like it's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Looks like it's good implementation.
The interface looks great.
So,
we worked hard on that. We went through like 50 iterations of the UI to get it just right.
It looks really, really great. So, we wish you the best luck on that, and hopefully you guys kind of explore more of that territory.
Oh, yeah.
Also, we're fucking adventure bros now, so...
Yes, I mean, like, right? It's a memory that we'll have forever.
Yeah. We want to thank you for coming by and going on a Taco Bell adventure with us and talking about Slapshot and, you know, the other great block games Columbia's known for. So, you're an awesome
guy
for doing it, and thanks for putting up with our antics. And
friend
really
of the
cool, man.
Friend of the Fat Cast.
Friend of the Fat Cast now.
I'm glad
absolutely
to be
awesome.
Counted among them.
Absolute status. All right, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Signing off.
Ow! We need help! That's what we do.
Good job, guys.
I'll just yell. Thank you.
You've been listening to FatCast. You can find us on the web at fortressat.com.
Sure, you cut and paste, so it doesn't matter.
Dalgleish.
Dalgleish, well done. Are we recording right now?
Once again, the mafia ran out of cups.
Yeah.
All right. Cool, cool, cool.
And your first name again, I'm sorry.
Grant.
It's really light. I mean, it's late. All right.
Grant Dalgleish.
Okay, so I am here with Grant Dalgleish of Columbia Games.
Hello.
Hi. Cray. Grant. Shit. Fuck that all out.
Start over.
Yeah. Al, edit all of this out. All of this. That's what we...